Special guest here on Spotlight, Kay Lynn. For those of you who may have just tuned in during the course of that song, and Kay Lynn, I am so honored and privileged to interview you. Of course, my name is Country Music Mar, and it's great to have you here.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm glad to be on board today, and this is something I've been looking forward to doing, and so I hope y'all aren't bored to tears.
Well, I doubt that. I don't think there's any chance of that happening. I know just by the preliminary interview that I had with you, I was spellbound by hearing about your life, and I'm sure everybody else will be too. So I guess the best place to start is at the beginning, and tell us a little bit about your childhood, and you live in Mississippi. Have you lived in Mississippi all your life?
Yes, I was born in Mississippi. As a matter of fact, I was born in Meridian, Mississippi, which is about 90 miles east of Jackson, the capital where I live now. And my hometown was Newton, Mississippi, which, of course, was about 30 miles west of Meridian. And I was born a little while back. And my mom had gone to Meridian for a couple of weeks for a recoup thing, and I couldn't wait. And she didn't get to recoup long because I made the scene. And I was, of course, born blind. I didn't know if I need to put that in here right now. But anyway, I was born blind. But that's about all it was.
Well, that's perfectly fine because I was eventually going to get into that, and it doesn't really matter when. Now, was your blindness caused by the traditional ROP or anything like that, or was it a different cause?
I have what they call congenital atrophy, which I think it's kind of an inherited thing from way back down in the blood somewhere. But, you know, of course, trying to trace that sometimes is kind of difficult because people are in denial of the fact that a lot of times blindness is hereditary, but I feel like that's a factor in it, but the only thing, I had light perception for a while, but I don't have that now, so I see good at night, but I found a lot of blind people have that problem later in life, and so I found out recently that that's just a thing that we have to deal with, but anyway, but that's the state of my blindness.
Kind of following the same thread, and I always like to ask people this because I remember when it happened to me. I know when I was a child, I didn't think I was different until I got old enough to start running and playing and romping with other kids, and I got left out of some of the games that they played because I couldn't see. Did you experience any of that?
No, as a matter of fact, I would get out in the mornings and Mama wouldn't see me till supper time. I went all over the neighborhood playing with the spotty kids, and I guess when I was little I kind of thought everybody was like me. But I didn't have any problem, you know, in my neighborhood, and I'd rode bicycles and trikes and like everybody else, and even tried to skate a little bit sometime, but that wasn't too good.
Yeah, I remember the skinned up knees from roller skating. I sure do. Now, did you go to a regular school, or did you go to a school for the blind?
I attended the Mississippi School for the Blind here in Jackson, and I graduated from there in 1966. So if y'all do your math, you'll figure out how long I've been out of school. But anyway, I completed 12 years there, and I was a boarding student at the School for the Blind. I lived in the dorm, and it was a wonderful life. And for those who went to school back then and boarded in the schools, you know the bonding that takes place. It's a bond. It's a family. It's just like living in your family, you know. It's just the big blind bunch.
So your experience at school was basically a pleasant one. And do you remember any particular activities that were your favorites?
Well, I think one of the things that stands out with me is the opportunities that were given to us as kind of being PR kids, because when I got in junior high and high school, we spent most of our time out on the road promoting the School for the Blind. Of course, I guess now I look back on it, back then we didn't have the government funding that they have now, and I didn't realize it, but they were just playing us to, I guess, convince the public or whatever that, you know, funds were needed for the School for the Blind back then. But we would go on these trips, and the band and chorus and, you know, different aspects of that would entertain, and it was neat.
Did you have any other siblings?
Yeah, there's four of us, and my sister is also blind, and she's a couple of years older than me, and we just, you know, in a sense, I guess that was one of the good things. It wasn't like I was alone, because as teenagers we had fun, and, you know, it was just always a neat thing. And we sang together a good bit when we got big enough they could stand us up on a chair or whatever to be seen. But we would sing together, and it was just a neat thing in that department.
Did she go to school with you?
Yes, she did. As a matter of fact, when I started the school, I guess I could kind of touch on this, but when I started the school, the rule back then was that a kid couldn't start till they were seven. And so in 1954, when I was 6 1/2, they decided that since Big Sister was at school, that maybe that they would kind of introduce me to it, and if I couldn't hack it, that, you know, they could come back and get me and let me start the next fall at age 7. But I think just knowing that she was there and everything, I mean, I took right a hold. I'm not going to say I didn't cry from time to time and I wasn't homesick, but I was so taken with, like, Braille and all the different things, and I just jumped right in there and got with it and learned everything I could. In a half year, I made the first grade, but they said because of the rule, they made me repeat the first grade the next year, and my teacher said she's going to be bored to tears, and said, I just really wish y'all would let her move on up. But I'd have graduated in 65 then, so I'm glad I waited to 66, because the bunch I graduated with was a lot of fun.
Well, that's really neat. You know, it's just really neat to hear that your school experience seemed to be a very pleasant thing for you. And when was the first inkling that you had that you might be really interested in music?
Well, Mama's always said, and I've heard her tell folks from time to time, that when I was about a year old and she'd be rocking me to sleep at night, Mama would hum, and she said that I would hum with her, you know, and she knew that I could carry a tune and stuff, and she knew that I was, I guess, born to sing. So one of the songs that stood out, and I've got it in here on tape, that my mom loved was The Old Lamp Lighter. And that was just, every time I play that, I just think, Mama used to rock me to sleep and hum The Old Lamp Lighter. It's an old song. It's real sweet. And it was just a real neat little song.
Yeah, that is a neat song. I remember that song, too. I remember the Browns recording it and stuff like that. You sound like you got a little choked up over that description.
Yeah, my mom was precious. I just, I miss my mother. She's been promoted, as they say.
Well,
and
like
I thought I got out of that window. I'm sorry. Let me see.
Well, I know what that's like. My mom will be gone 20 years this year, and it's hard to believe. So I can definitely relate. I have memories that crop up from time to time, or even that song that we played at the beginning, that Sweet Baby Girl, kind of gets me a little bit misty-eyed. So I can definitely relate. So as you went through school, did you become involved in the music activities of the school?
Oh, yes, I did. You know, as it would go, I was in the chorus, and at first, when I went into piano, they tried to teach me to read Braille music, and that was gibberish to me, y'all. I could not read that stuff. That was just the most wild-looking stuff I ever saw. And I'm going to tell you, I made my worst grades in music because my elementary teacher got off right on the bat that I play by ear, and they tried to discourage that. And because she said that I tried to play by ear too much, I think that was one reason I made bad grades in music, because I wouldn't just cow down to what they wanted to do. I guess in that sense, I was kind of like Ronnie Millsap. I was going to do my own thing. And in the summer, of course, we had a piano at home, and that is where I'd go gangbusters. And then in the fall, it was kind of hard for me to cow back down to what they wanted me to do. So in the sixth grade, she decided that she wasn't going to teach me anymore, so I hung out about a year. And when I got in the seventh grade, our band instructor decided that he wanted to take me under wing and let me play piano for the band. And so I first tried to play the saxophone, and that sounded like somebody whooping a dog. So I couldn't play that because I'd get too tickled. And then he got me in there and decided that he would let me work out on piano. He taught me a lot of chord theory and stuff, and it was real funny. I guess I need to tell this right quick, and then I'm going to let up off this thing and let her talk some more. But we used to have two pianos in the studio when he was showing me, you know, stuff to do for the band. And we would be playing along, him on one piano, me on the other. And when we would hit a good chord or something, I'd scream because I just loved it, you know. And one day he said, Jan, don't do that. Said, somebody might think I'm doing something to you in here.
I wish that everybody could hear my reaction as she's telling these stories, because I'm just sitting here grinning and laughing. And that's funny. And I can definitely relate also about the Braille music thing. I felt exactly the same way about it. I had one heck of a time with Braille music, so I know exactly what you're talking about. So, did you do any country music band work at the time, or did you just do things with the school?
My senior year, my band teacher, he decided that he would get me some gigs around town, and I played with some combo groups around town. Of course, he was real selective about where I played because he knew he had my daddy at the other end of the pipe. And he knew he better not put me in any rough places. And I played a lot of supper club work around town and restaurants and things, kind of with some combo groups around. But then after I got out of high school, I linked up with a band out of Macomb, Mississippi, called the Town and Country Band. And if you want me to, I'll elaborate on that a little bit.
Why, sure, go ahead. And don't ever worry about monopolizing the microphone, because this is your show, my friend.
In 1967, I linked up with this band as I was staying out of Macomb, Mississippi, and I was with that group for about 2.5 years. And we played a lot of family show things, like down in Ponchatoula, Louisiana. We would go down and play the South Louisiana Hayride, and it was a real family-oriented show. And the first time that I performed with the band down there, I would just do stand-up singing. I didn't play piano, I think, because most of the time we didn't have a piano to play in a situation like that. So I was just their girl singer, as they called it back then. And anyway, the first time that I got up to sing, I sang Blue Kentucky Girl. And I started off, and I guess I got into it about 4 or 5 bars, and then the crowd just went wild. You know, they started clapping, and I thought, oh, what do I do here? So, of course, I just kept on singing. And but in this time, I was had the opportunity to play with some artists like David Houston. And as a matter of fact, one night, David Houston was on the bill with us, and of course, we would open, and then, you know, he would come on later. But his manager came up to me and said, when the show's over, said, I want to talk to you. Of course, I wasn't but 16, and I mean, I didn't know rats about anything much. So I said, okay. Well, as it would have it, David Houston got sick, and they had to, you know, get on out. So I missed my calling.
Well, that's too bad, but I guess maybe it just wasn't meant to be. But, wow, at least they definitely showed interest, and I can certainly understand why. You're a great country girl singer. So, did you go to college?
No, I went to vocational school. Let's see. In the fall of 66, when everybody's going back to school, boy, it hit me like a bomb. I thought, oh, no, you know, I'm not going anywhere. But I had signed up to go to vocational school. At that time, rehab didn't send us to college back when Mississippi just didn't have much money in the rehab business. And also, at that time, scholarships were hard to find. And I had made up my mind that, you know, of course, my folks just couldn't afford to send me to school, like not to college. Absolutely, it's just too expensive. So I went to vocational school, and I took medical transcribing, which I decided right off the bat that I wasn't cut out for. And then, which that's a good thing to be in, but I just, you know, decided that all those terms was bigger than I was, or longer than I was. And anyway, I went into PBX Switchboard, and I next year landed a job in Jackson here at the welfare department as a switchboard operator, and I was known as Miss Welfare.
Yeah, switchboard was fun, and I got in right at the end of the switchboard days. I worked switchboard at the School for the Blind in Wisconsin, and but shortly after I graduated, then they started coming out with all these automation things, so I didn't get the chance to do that like some folks did. But when you started performing, did you use the name Kaylin? You said you made a reference to Jan, so probably for those of you who have never seen Kaylin before, you should probably tell them that your name is not really Kaylin.
No, actually, I'm Janice Kay. I was born Janice Kay Bounds, but I come by the name Kaylin. When I came in here, I wasn't sure exactly what this was all about a couple of years ago, and I'll tell you that Kaylin, of course, is my musician name, but it's also the little girl that I never could have, and so it kind of caught on. But no, I'm Janice, and I'm Kaylin. You know, in here, but if y'all ever see Janice, you'll know it's me.
I think the name Kaylin's beautiful anyway. And have you been using that name as a stage name if you will, for a long time?
Not too long, no. Back then, I didn't think about doing it. I wished I had. But back then, I just was Jan with the Town and Country Band.
Okay. Well, my goodness, believe it or not, I have actually come down to the end of my notes. That didn't take near as long as I had thought. So I'm kind of thinking of some loose ends that I could tie up here. And so you worked with a Town and Country Band, and that was the one that you worked in on the Louisiana Hayride with, right?
That's correct. And I'd like to say that during that time, I started writing songs and set up phone. And anyway, I wrote several songs, and so they talked me into going to a little studio down in Angie, Louisiana. The name of the label was called Big Howdy. And my sister and I went down there and cut a couple of songs that I wrote. One was called Miss Lonely Heart, and the other one was called If Heartache Calls on You. And needless to say, I wrote those songs coming off of, you know, one of those jilt things.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I think most of country music is written out of experiences and things like that. So, yep, usually we write about how we feel. And have you ever done any professional recording?
No, I sure haven't. Especially now, you know, with things the way they are set up now. But back then, when I did that little session down in Louisiana, they had this little studio, and we went in there, and they put us in these little booths that looked like they had cotton and all kind of insulation hung up on the partition walls. And at that time, they didn't use headphones or anything. You couldn't hardly hear anything. And I'd step outside that booth so I could hear the rhythm guitar at least, you know, so I'd know where in the world we were. And that was quite an experience. And I was surprised it came out like it did. But, of course, we didn't have anybody to help promote. That was one of the things. They said it's kind of like you just go in there, cut your session, and do with it what you want to. You buy the... We bought, I think, three or 400 singles of that, and they gave us a master tape, which, you know what, I don't know. It seemed like Mom and them sent that tape to somebody, and we didn't know anything back then about dubbing and copying off, and needless to say, we never got it back, but that was the master tape to that session got lost. But we just promoted it ourselves. We mostly, I guess, was... You know, really, the main thing was to get our money back out of the session. I think we put up something like $400 or $500, but back in the 60s, that was a lot of money. And we just, the main thing was to get our money back, which we did do, and we would take it to shows and sell it, you know, for $1.45. It was on a little 45 RPM. And, it got on the jukebox. They put it on jukebox here in several places, like the root beer stands and different places. And, you know, the airplay here, they gave us a little bit. And it was, well, you know, it was a good experience. But, boy, I don't know what it would be like today. A dear friend of mine in Nashville who was, he also went to school for the blind here, but he has been promoted back in 1999. We lost him. And anyway, he told me in the summer of 1999 when he was so sick, he said, look, so let me tell you what you do. He said, you write a bunch of songs and said, you come up here next spring and said, I'm going to take you and we're going to cut you a CD. And I said, okay. I said, so you know what you got to do, don't you? And of course, I knew that he was pretty ill and probably wasn't going to do it, but that was kind of the thing he hung me with, was the challenge was, you come up here and we're going to cut you. We're going to cut you a record. But anyway, it didn't happen again. There, you know, this wasn't meant to be, I reckon.
I'm sorry that that opportunity was missed. And that was kind of my next question, is if you ever had anybody actually promote you or you know, you certainly are a talented person. And one of the things I really like about your singing is that you sing with a lot of feeling. There's a lot of good singers out there, but very few people really pour their heart and soul into their music and actually tell a story or explain their feelings when they sing. And I really admire you because you do that.
Thank you, Mar. You're so kind. I yeah, you know, singing is one of the best things that you certainly can vent your emotions. And some days, y'all, I go out in the studio, and if the air's not right or if I'm not right, I just fold up and quit because, you know, if it's not, if the mix is not there, and I know that's probably happened a lot of times to musicians who, you know, they'll just say, I just ain't got it today or something. But anyway, like I say, I try to feel my songs, and a lot of times if a song don't hit me right, I know one time my sister and I used to, when we were back in high school, we were given an opportunity to appear on a farm show here a couple of days a week on TV, and it was a noon show, and we had a lot of opportunity there to go do personal appearances statewide because the range of the TV station was pretty far out, and people would contact us to come do special things. But one day, Mama had pressured us into learning a song, and neither one of us felt good about it. Well, you know, to please Mama, we tried, and so we got on there, and we sung through the first verse and got through the bridge, and to come back in, I sat there waiting on her. She sat there, and she waited on me. And I thought, ye gad, somebody's got to say something or do something. Well, I played through the verse until we got to the bridge again, and we'd sing that, and then the same thing. We went blank. We could not think. Well, I covered us up pretty well playing the piano. And after we got off the air, Mama said, y'all messed up. She said, the looks on your faces, she said, if somebody would have touched you with a feather, said both of you would have fell over. And I said, you're probably right. So my daddy told her later that night, he said, let me tell you something, Mama. Said, don't fuss at these girls. Said, they're doing the best they can. Said, you had no business trying to make them learn a song they didn't want to learn anyhow. So he said, from now on, you leave it up to them. If they want to learn it, fine. If they don't, don't.
Well, yeah, I know exactly what you mean, and of course you probably know, you know, when you do gigs and stuff like that, especially if you're playing for the public, you have to learn songs that maybe you wouldn't ordinarily learn. And I remember one time that happened to me. People were trying to convince me to learn Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue, and I kept saying, that's not my kind of song. And I did learn that one, and I wound up enjoying singing it a whole lot more than I ever thought I would. Did anything like that ever happen to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. One of the songs that I've really enjoyed singing lately is a song that I learned off of a Barbara Fairchild album called Standing in Your Line, and I really love to sing that song. And a song that my husband, my late husband Carter, really loved was a Patsy Cline ballad called If I Could See the World Through the Eyes of a Child, and I love to sing that one too. That's a beautiful song.
Well, that is a beautiful song, and yeah, I know Standing in Your Line, I don't know the song, but I know exactly which one you mean. Well, since we've got some time, I was wondering if you would just kind of touch on your involvement with the Mississippi American Council, and I know you wrote a campaign song, and I'm thinking maybe we might feature that, but first of all, tell us a little bit about your involvement.
Well, I'm a charter member of the Mississippi Council of the Blind. We were organized in 1972. Now, that's a while back, too, folks. But anyway, I would kind of be in and out as far as involvement, as far, you know, as maybe sometimes I wouldn't be as active as, for instance, in the later 70s and 80s. I lived in Oxford, Mississippi at that time, and we didn't have a council up there, so I was kind of out of the mix for a while, but I got back down. Of course, I kept up my dues, so I didn't get kicked out or anything. But I'm right now serving as secretary of the council, recording secretary, and that's one of the biggest jobs in there. Trust me. Trust me, y'all. Anyway, I'm going to throw my name in the ring for president come spring. We're having our convention up in Tupelo, Mississippi, up in North Mississippi, in Elvis's country, and he's not there, but we're gonna all go to Tupelo. So anyway, I plan to put my name in the ring, and I know it's a big job, and I know it's gonna be a lot of challenge to it. And someone told me, said, the only thing, said, you're so tender-hearted, said, you know, said, you're not going to always do what everybody wants you to do, and said, you're going to have folks unhappy with you and stuff. And I said, well, I said, you know, I said, I'll cry my tears in silence, and they won't know it.
Now, are you sure Elvis won't be there? They say he's been making appearances all over the country. You just never know. Oh, I chuckled pretty good when you said that. Well, why don't we go ahead and play this song? Do you have any kind of introductory remarks to set the stage for the song?
Well, no. I will say that I wrote this song, and I'm kind of proud of that. So I think it kind of says it all. We were organized and chartered back in 72, the Council of the Blind for me and you. Improving things to make life better for you is what MCB continues to do. Improving today for tomorrow is MCB's motto. So get on board and let's work harder, so the Council of the Blind will grow and grow. MCB is celebrating year 31. There's still a lot to do that we haven't done. If I'm elected president in 2003, I'll do the best I can for MCB. Political, social, educational too. Our issues MCB addresses for you. MCB has many challenges for me and you. There's a lot of things left for us to do. Improving today for tomorrow is MCB's motto. So get on board and let's work harder, so the Council of the Blind will grow and grow. MCB is celebrating year 31. There's still a lot to do that we haven't done. If I'm elected president in 2003, I'll do the best I can for MCB. Oh, improving today for tomorrow is MCB's motto. So get on board and let's work harder, so the Council of the Blind will grow and grow, grow and grow. MCB is celebrating year 31. There's still a lot to do that we haven't done. If I'm elected president in 2003, I'll do a good job for MCB. If I'm elected president in 2003, I'll do a good job for MCB. Elect Dennis Gable for president of Mississippi Council of the Blind. MCB for you, for me. Vote for Dennis for president 2003. Thank you.
Well, you certainly got me convinced. If I lived in Mississippi, I'd vote for you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yeah, that was a fun little thing to do. So we'll just see.
Well, we'll definitely keep you in prayer and help you all keep us posted and let us know whether you are awarded that honor. And like you say, you know, you'll have a lot on your shoulders, but I'm sure you'll be able to handle it just fine. I think what we'll do now, because I'm sure that there are a lot of people that will be interested in asking you additional questions about your life. We've got one more song to play at the end, but I think we'll wait until we've answered a few questions, and when it gets to be just about 10:30, whatever time it is where you are, we will play the song. But let's open it to questions now.
Okay, Lynn, just wanted to say thank you. Sweet, sweet lady with a sweet voice. And I was wondering if you could tell us about the funniest or most untoward gig you've ever had, other than forgetting the words on the farm show at noon.
Well, let's see. One night I was playing at a restaurant here in town, and anyway, this lady, it was at a piano bar is where I was playing, but everybody's sitting around there, you know, just singing and doing whatever. But anyway, I got done and I went on break, and my mom always told me at night there to wear, even, you know, performing, to wear shades, because she said, baby, your eyes jump sometimes. Said, I know you can't control the muscles in your eyes, and said they'll jump and cross and do all kind of stuff. Of course, it wasn't bothering me none, but anyway, so I, you know, to please mama again, I would wear my shades. And this guy, I don't know if he was kind of on his way or what, but anyway, he came up to me and he said, you know what, he said, when you take off them glasses, you're going to be blind as a bat. Said, when you get back out in the light, you're not going to be able to see nothing. And I just kind of grinned. That's funny.
That's good, Caitlin. That's great. Sounds like you had an interesting life there. Yeah, I was just curious. I thought I caught you say something about your husband. And so I didn't realize you were married, and is your husband blind?
Actually, my husband is deceased now. He died in 1996. He had peritonitis, which took him pretty quick, and it was a real sudden thing. And it was in the holiday season of Christmas. So, you know, that time's kind of tough for me now. But he had RP, and he had a lot of, well, I'd say he had a good bit of sight, but the last year of his life, they changed his glasses 4 times, so his sight was going quick. You know, sometimes RP takes it pretty quick, and then sometimes it's kind of a long, drawn thing. But I guess the good Lord knew that Carter couldn't hack being blind, all the way blind, you know. But anyway, he used to marvel at how, he said, I was so organized, and he just never, he said, I don't have to be so I can see. But, you know, toward the last, it was, his vision was going quick, because like I said, they changed his lens 4 times in that year.
How long were you married to him, Kaylin?
We were married 4.5 years. Actually, what happened, the way I met Carter was, he was a blinded veteran, and he needed a secretary. And so he was a service officer in the Blinded Veterans Association, and what he did was he helped blinded veterans get their compensation going, and, you know, it was kind of like a case worker or like a power of attorney type thing. It was a lot of highbrow confidentiality type stuff, and of course I fit that bill, because when I worked with the welfare department, that's one of the things that they stressed was, you better not tell it, you know. So anyway, he needed a secretary, and I helped him, and we started dating in 1989, and we got married in 1991 out in Reno, Nevada. We were at the Blinded Veterans Convention that summer, and we decided to get married there. And, I mean, we did it right. We got married in the Chapel of the Bells. I mean, had a beautiful little ceremony, had pictures and had a video made of it, and had, of course, our families couldn't be there, but we had 20 of our convention attending VA friends and their wives or whatever, or you know, their sweet things or whatever, but anyway, but that's how that came to be.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. We kind of discussed in the onset whether we were going to get into the situation with Carter, but we kind of decided that we'd sort of see how the thing went, and thanks for asking that question, Terry, because it sounds like he was just a really, really neat person, and you've got a lot of pleasant memories there, and I'm sorry that it was such a short-lived experience.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. I tell folks, well, you know, I said, Carter, my thing was like a continuous date. The only beautiful thing was that I didn't have to go home, or he didn't either. We just had a real good thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's really wonderful. Any additional questions?
Kaylin, great interview. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Not like Mara, I've been sitting over here chuckling. I know you and Sherry W. are good friends, and you sing a lot together. Now, she's in Tennessee, and you're in Mississippi. How did you two meet? And I know you both enjoy a lot of the same good talent.
Sherry and I met in 1998 at the National ACB Convention in Orlando, Florida, and the mutual friend that we have together that I talked to or talked about just a little bit ago, who wanted me to come to Nashville, lived in Nashville. They were very good friends, Benny and Sherry. And Benny told me, he said, Janice, I got somebody I want you to meet now when we go to Florida. And we hit it off immediately. And I have to say, she's a doll, and she's been to my house twice. And when she leaves, it's a real empty feeling here at my house. It's just, she's just so much fun, and we have a good time. And I went to the Tennessee alumni. She invited me up there a couple of seasons ago, and last year they made me honorary member up there, and I just love Tennessee. I know if I ever left Mississippi, that's probably where I'd land, is in Tennessee.
Yeah, we'll even give you a top sheet.
Well, I know I've heard you girls sing together before, and that is just the coolest thing. And so, did you meet each other as a result of your singing, or how did you discover that you could sing so well together?
Well, in the hospitality room of the National Convention, they have what they call blind talent. Well, I guess what they do is they ask, you know, somebody to come work the room at night. And on Monday night, they had asked me to come up and play, and I had done that before in L.A. and in Houston. Or in Houston and in L.A. and Orlando. But anyway, I told Benny, I said, look, I said, I've got to play that room. I want you to come help me play this gig. And he said, all right. And so Sherry came, and, I mean, we stood around the piano and sung and just had the best time.
Oh, I bet that was just cool. I can just picture myself being right in the middle of that, and oh, my goodness, that must have been really neat.
Wonderful interview, Marvin. And Kaylin, thank you so much.
Thank y'all. Y'all are just precious to me, and I'm just so glad I got to come in, and this has been real easy. I didn't know how. I thought, gosh, how am I going to talk about me for an hour?
Well, like I told you when we were doing our preliminary, it's surprising how fast the time does go, and it has certainly been an honor and privilege for me to do this. And each time I do it, I'm getting a little better and a little more organized. And I just appreciate Becky and Dennis and everybody involved with the Spotlight crew for giving me the opportunity to do this. And Becky, I think we'll play the last song, Till I Can Make It On My Own. Do you have any introductory remarks about this song? Easy for me to say.
This is just a song that I've wanted to learn and do for a long time, and I don't know why I never did, but I found a good track of it last summer, and I just said, well, here's the time. So I have done it, and this is another song that I love to sing now. It really spills emotion, and a lot of folks can relate to a situation like this, I'm sure. So that's what this one is.
I'll need time to get you off my mind, and I may sometimes bother you, try to be in touch with you, even ask too much of you from time to time. Now and then, Lord, you know I'll need a friend till I get used to losing you. Let me keep on using you and make it on my own. I'll get by, but no matter
job, Kaylin, and thanks, Becky, for playing those songs for us. Appreciate that.
I'm surprised they haven't been worn out. I've played them so many times. I'm glad they could you could still hear them.
Very nice, Miss P.
Thank you.
They're beautiful, beautiful songs. I really enjoy them.
Audrey.
Kaylin, this is Audrey. I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs, and sometime I'd be glad to buy one of your CDs if you want to sell them.
Well, I'll just have to get some, as I say, some snail mail addresses, and like I said, I've achieved that goal in 2003. I'm burning my CDs now, so I'd be pleasured, Audrey, and we'll look on that and get a mail address.
Okay, Lynn. The first song you sang had Sweet Baby Girl in there. Is that where you got the neck of Sweet Baby Girl?
kind of, yeah, you know, back when we used to kind of come in here and log in names, one day I just decided I'd come in as Sweet Baby Girl. Jerry Kidd got a kick out of that. And anyway, I just kind of took that song title that day. I had been singing it in the studio, and I came back here and logged on as Sweet Baby Girl, but that's kind of where I got it. But my dad used to call me Sweet Baby Girl, too.
Hey, Kaylin, does you and your sister get together much and sing anymore, or do you have any recordings of the two of you?
We sing together some, but we don't get to get out and do like we used to. She's married, and, you know, she has a full life there, but we do sing together. As a matter of fact, Terry, I have gotten some of our stuff on MP3, and we're real proud. There's nothing like sibling harmony, for sure, and she's a joy to sing with when we get to sing. But she had some health issues and a while back, and like she said her voice dropped an octave or two, and I laugh and tell her, oh no, it's still there, honey.
I gotta tell you something. I'm doing my downloads directory now in folders, and I've got like a music folder and an old time radio folder, and I have a chick singer folder. Well, I just stuck all my chick singers. Honey, we're in there with Trisha Yearwood and Tammy Cochran, and you and me and Lynn. We're in there with everybody.
And Kaylin, I'd be interested in one of those CDs also.
Can we hear one of the MP3s of you and your sister? That would be wonderful.
I don't know how to do that, Jennifer. I don't know how to play it where y'all can hear it, but I'll send you one. How about that?
Yeah, boy. Thank you, Kaylin.
Yeah. Good, and I'll get it from Jen.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that myself. That'd be great. And Kaylin, it was such a joy to interview you. It really was. I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
I enjoyed it, too. And like I said, this went real quick, and I was happy to be in here to do it today. We hit a snag 2 weeks ago, but maybe this was a charm, huh?
Boy, it certainly was. We had very little breakup, and the volume level was real nice and consistent, and I think Dennis is going to get a nice presentation out of this.
Yeah, Dennis wrote a little note in the window, said, be sure and tell you, great interview, Kaylin.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Jennifer and Becky and Marlene and Dennis here today, the crew. Y'all are great. Thank you. And my audience, I can't see who you are because something's in the window, but thank all y'all for coming in.
Kaylin, I have one more question to ask. Where did you say you lived?
I live in Jackson, Mississippi.
You know, I like to hear you say that.
See, we never interviewed a politician before. The next president of the Mississippi Council for the Blind.